Welcome back to episode 64 of the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined not only by Matt Collins of Over the Monster, but we have our first special guest, Jen McCaffrey of Mass Live, is joining us. She is from, she is in Fort Myers. I shouldn't say she's from Fort Myers, but she's there, and she's going to give us some spring training updates. So welcome back to the show, Jen.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much.
Matt, how are you today?
Oh, wonderful as always.
Excellent. So, Jen, we'd be remiss if we didn't lead off with the thing that everybody has been talking about this entire offseason, which is JD Martinez. What is your sense on this situation right now? I know it's one that's sort of not doing anything at the moment, but is Arizona a legitimate contender, and do you think the Red Sox are getting anxious here?
Yeah, we talked to Dombrowski this week. I think it was yesterday maybe. The days are all running together. It does seem like I am from Fort Myers because I've only been here, 3 years, and I feel like I live here already. But yeah, Dombrowski, you know, it's interesting. It's really hard to read at this point. You know, I think it was Alex Spear who had the report a couple days ago that the offer seems to be closer to $100 million than $125 million, which was originally ported over 5 years. But it does seem like that's what they're sticking with, and they're not budging, not, you know, bidding against themselves. We try, you know, obviously to ask Dombrowski, you know, about, you know, talking around things, and he won't give specifics, but try to get a feel for you know, how he's handling it. And he just kind of plays it straight down the middle. I don't think that they're necessarily getting anxious. I actually honestly believe that Dombrowski feels that this team, with the guys that are coming back and healthy, that they can be a very good offense. And just last year, you know, things kind of fell apart. So I think that they're going to stick with that 5 and 100, and that Martinez might be the one that's getting anxious and kind of wanting to figure things out. Now, obviously, like you mentioned, Arizona, I'm not sure if they're a legitimate contender just because they have to move around so much money, in order to make that fit. And maybe they're willing to kind of bite the bullet. I know, obviously, JD's hitting coach that he's always had is there. And, you know, that he obviously has a little bit of familiarity there, having played there at the end of last season. So it could go either way in my mind at this point. You know, earlier in the season, I had no doubt that he would be in Boston. And now it kind of feels a little bit up in the air, or a lot more up in the air. So I honestly wish I could give you a straighter answer, but it just sort of seems like we're playing it day to day at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely been an odd situation. I wonder if this, in your mind, has more to do with the player, there being an issue with the player, or whether this has to do with the ridiculously slow market that we've seen this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a little bit to do with both. I mean, obviously, Martinez wants what he wants, and he's not budging. He wants the 6 years and more money. And, there's no one else that's willing to give him that money, and the Red Sox are not going to bid against themselves. So it's kind of this push and pull. And, of course, Martinez has Scott Boras as his agent, who's notoriously difficult and tough to handle. So, it's just kind of been, you know, the market's been slow for everyone. But I wonder if this was sort of a unique situation in just in general where, this might have happened anyway. We asked Dombrowski if there was like a cutoff point this spring when he would want to have like a roster complete, so Cora would know who he's going to have in his lineup. And he kind of obviously talked around that and said, you know, I've made a lot of moves in spring training before, none extremely large, but I've still made spring training moves and kept talking about how this spring training is different than any of the 40 previous spring trainings. So he kind of just, as he does, you know, tried to talk around it and not give too many specifics and that kind of thing. But this just is a weird situation. And you would think that you'd want a guy to be meshed into the group during spring training and not just, you know, sign that final week or whatever it is and then get thrown into the lineup, because that seems like it would mess up the chemistry or at least, you know, be kind of a weird situation for guys. And just weird for Martinez to kind of be like in this tug of war with the team and then finally relent maybe. And what kind of, I don't know, feelings might he have? So it's just a weird, weird situation.
Yeah, definitely bizarre. I wonder if your sense is that if they don't make this move, that they'll still go after other free agents who are out there. So a few of the guys that we've talked about on the show are Eduardo Nunez and Tony Watson as potential targets for the Red Sox. They seem to make a lot of sense, but we haven't really heard a lot of chatter about it. There was a rumor that Watson was connected to the team, but is your sense that if they don't sign Martinez, that they're totally okay with standing pat?
I don't know if they're totally okay with standing pat. And again, I don't know if this is just sort of Dombrowski kind of trying to, you know, leverage a situation. But he talked a lot more yesterday about trade rumors being a lot more of a thing this spring than in years past. And teams, because of the market not wanting to, you know, move one way or another, teams are looking to just trade guys. And he's fielded four or five phone calls a day. And again, we don't really know how much of this is true or if, and he said that this is like trades involving players of prominence. So they could, yeah, I feel like out of those two guys, you know, if they're trying to add offense, obviously Nunez would be the way to go there. You kind of have a lot of guys in that middle infield mix, but Nunez seemed to fit well here last year. So, and you know, he's been tied to the Red Sox semi recently, at least I think a few weeks ago, Chad Jennings from the Herald wrote that he's still been in contact, with the Sox. So, yeah, I mean, of those two guys, I feel like Nunez might be more of a target, but then again, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Dombrowski pulls some weird, you know, trade, that brings in a bat, this spring in the next few weeks.
I should just say, literally like 2 or 3 minutes ago, Ian Brown just said that they're gaining more momentum towards Nunez. So,
okay. Oh, okay. Didn't even see that. So.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I actually had a question about the market in general. There's obviously been some tension between the players and the league. Have any Red Sox players said anything or spoken up about that at all?
Pretty much most of them have sort of played it down the middle. We've asked a lot of guys about, you know, free agency. We asked Chris Sale the other day, and he was kind of, you know, saying it's an unfortunate situation, but he's not kind of, you know, involved in it, so he feels for the guys, but, you know, he wasn't saying too much. We talked to Price the other day on a big group session, and he, you know, and the question was posed to him about his opt out and, you know, knowing that the market is the way it is this off season, what that might mean for next off season. And if that's more incentive for him to stay in Boston. And, you know, he said he hasn't thought about it, needs to talk to his agent, but like that he, you know, would want, can see himself staying in Boston. Didn't really talk too much about the market. So guys aren't really, there's not too many guys on this team that are, you know, you could say Price is probably the most controversial outspoken, but even he wasn't really one to say, you know, this is ridiculous and they need to treat us better. None of them have really said that. They've kind of just all said it's a tough situation. And you know, we kind of feel bad for the guys that are dealing with it. Mitch Moreland, when we talked to him the other day, was saying that he's glad he signed, you know, when he did with the Red Sox, because if he waited, you know, longer, it might not have, you know, worked in his favor. So, yeah, none of the guys have taken any like controversial stances.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like Chris Sale might be doing his media training with the Patriots these days.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So we have to ask you, because every year when we have media guys and girls on from Fort Myers, typically their accommodations have something wrong with them. And the Projo guys were notorious for this, whether it's water not running or anything like that. So how are your accommodations so far in Fort Myers?
So far, so good. Last year, we had a condo, an Airbnb that actually wasn't too bad. It was in Cape Coral. So that was kind of a little bit of a hike. It was like 45 minutes every morning. But today, or this year, we're there's a courtyard that a Marriott that's not too far from the park. So it's actually hasn't been too bad. So knock on wood that nothing crazy happens. But It's even got a Starbucks in here, so that keeps me happy.
Oh, there you go. Got the coffee in the morning, you're all set. So we have to ask about Blake Swihart, because he is certainly one of my favorite players. I disagree with how the Red Sox have handled him. I think a lot of people do. But I wanted to get your sense as to what his role is going to be on this team. He's obviously out of options. Are they really going to try him at second base? Do you think that he's going to catch it all? I mean, is Leon going to get traded? There's a whole lot of stuff up in the air right now with Blake Swihart. It seems like he's finally healthy, but what's your sense on what's going on with him?
I see him, so he's come into camp. He's been, catching a lot of the bullpens, and I kind of see him being that backup catch. I don't know that Sandy will be traded. I think that they kind of like to have that solid backup, because, Swihart's great, but still doesn't have, as much experience necessarily as Sandy does back there. You have Vasquez would be your number one guy, Sandy kind of right behind him, or, splitting times semi like they did last year. And then I feel like, when you want to give those guys a day off or something, you would throw in Swihart. But he's been taking a lot of reps. Cora told him, just take reps at any infield spot at this, just to kind of get acclimated again to the infield. Of course, we all know that before he started catching, he was a shortstop in high school. So I see him more on kind of that side of the infield, and maybe not necessarily at second. They seem to have a ton of guys that can kind of fill in at second utility wise, but maybe even, short or third, just to kind of would be where he'd be more comfortable. I could even honestly see him getting time at first. I'm not too sure that they would. They've said that they might try him again in the outfield, but I'm not sure. I think that they would stick more with him in that kind of on the left side of the infield and see what they can get out of him there. But I really honestly think they're going to like base a lot of this on how comfortable he looks, at those positions this spring. Like that this is kind of I think obviously since he's out of options, he'll be around, but I think they're going to figure out what position he's best suited for by putting him in games and kind of playing him, seeing where he fits most comfortable. So, that'll be interesting to watch, see how he handles that and kind of plays this weird utility role where he's catching and also playing, the infield as his backup guy. So I think they really want to find a spot for him on the roster. It's just kind of a matter of how consistent his playing time going to be and kind of how he can handle all that.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch. It seems like they've got a glut of guys that could potentially be on the bench for them this year. There's Brock Holt, who could potentially be back with the team. I mean, he's back right now. He's at spring training. But what's your sense of how the bench is actually going to end up shaking out here?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like we said, we had Swihart, then you have Holt, who, it seems like he'll be around. He seems in great shape this spring. He seems like he's bulked up a little bit, which we haven't really seen more muscular, I guess, a Brock Holt, which is kind of interesting. But I guess it proves that he's healthy now. Still obviously got Devin Marrero, Zue Lin, Marco Hernandez. Hernandez has options, so I mean, there's flexibility there where you can kind of start him in Pawtucket, and I would assume that Lynn would too. If you go with maybe Marrero and Holt and then Swihart, I haven't really like written everything down to see how the numbers would work out, but I feel like that's kind of those three guys are the main, I guess, backups, infield backups, and Holt obviously can do outfield too. So that's kind of what it feels like in these early days of camp. But again, we'll kind of have to see how things play out with, of course, injuries that might crop up or whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. How has the outfield situation looked? So obviously the starting three outfielders are set there, but has Bryce Brents arrived at camp yet? And do you think that the team's comfortable going forward with him as the fourth outfielder next year?
I haven't seen Bryce yet. We've been focusing mainly, obviously, because it was pitchers and catchers reported a couple days ago. So we've mainly focusing on catching up with a lot of that side of things. I haven't seen Bryce. He might be here. There's about 60 guys, it feels like, and half of them are the guys that you never see, so you're trying to figure out who's who. But yeah, I haven't seen Bryce yet. But yeah, I mean, that's their plan, is that he's going to be their fourth outfielder, and you know, play those corner spots, and then kind of switch in Benintendi into center when Jackie needs a day off. Bryce isn't necessarily going to be that center field guy, but he hit the 30 homers last year in AAA. I don't know how that'll translate at the major league level, but it seems that that's, what they're going with right now. And, I haven't seen him. So I haven't seen how he appears, or kind of him hitting yet. That's the plan that they kind of have laid out so far.
Have you seen Tyler Thornburg? And is he throwing on a normal program yet?
Yeah, I actually just wrote a short thing about him today. He isn't on a normal program yet. He's not throwing off a mound. He's just kind of throwing on flat ground and playing catch. So they're kind of building him up slowly. I think when we met with him at the Red Sox winter weekend, he said that once he got here to camp, which I think was maybe a couple weeks ago, that he was just going to be sort of throwing and then kind of progressing out to that 120, 150 mark. And then be evaluated. So far so good. In that sense, I saw him doing. He's not throwing off the mound or anything. But I was kind of following a bunch of the relievers around camp today, taking a video, and he was in that group with those guys, but doing the PFB drills. So he was kind of taking comebackers to the mound and doing that kind of stuff. So he's moving around and kind of with the guys, not, on the thrown off a mound yet. But, Cora actually kind of just brought up that he was impressed with even just watching Thornburg play catch. And he said that he kind of was impressed with just the conviction that he had in playing catch. So I don't know if he meant just because it seems that Thornburg's excited to get back out there, that he's kind of rearing to go type thing. So he hasn't. We don't know his throwing schedule just yet, but it does seem like things are progressing in the right direction for Thornburg.
Does it seem like it's their plan to have him for opening day, or has that just not been decided?
That's been the loose plan. I don't think they want to set an exact timetable, because really until he starts throwing off the mound and then kind of has that next day and see how he feels and then goes back and how's the next one feel, I don't think they want to set an exact date to say he's going to be ready for opening day, because I think they don't know necessarily how he's going to react once, because he hasn't pitched in 9 months or 10 months or whatever it is since the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. So I think they just want to see how he bounces back from these outings. And then obviously once he gets into games. So it's going to be, I think when we talked to him at the winter weekend, and I'd asked him what he normally throws in spring training, he said usually like five or six bullpens and then gets into like four or five games. So I'm not sure, he said he's not really sure how many he'll be able to fit in this spring, but I guess that we can use that as like a loose guide. So the goal is to get him as close to opening day as possible, but again, we'll see once he starts to get going how he bounces back from the workload.
Obviously Thornburg's not really part of this, but as far as the setup guy behind Kimbrel, is there any early favorite? Is it Carson Smith like most people think, or do you think Matt Barnes and Joe Kelly have a better chance than they're getting credit for?
I still, if I had to put money on it right now, I'd still go with Carson. I saw, like I said, I was with some of the relievers today, and I saw him throwing, and he looked, pretty sharp. And even talked to him afterwards, and he said he's, excited that he's finally healthy, and he's already thrown five or six bullpens, so he's rearing to go. So he looks like he probably has that if camp ended today, even though it just started, he would be that guy. Kelly, we'll see how kind of Kelly evens things out over spring, and I feel like Kelly and Barnes will be sort of that middle relief type seventh inning-ish guy that we've seen them. But Yeah, at the very early stage, it looks like Carson will be that guy. But, you know, again, who knows if someone could win it over by the end of spring.
Okay.
I want to get back to the catching position a little bit. Vasquez has said a couple interesting things this offseason, and one of them is that he would like to catch more, and that's not surprising considering, you know, he's healthy and he had a pretty good season last year. But what is your sense that around the team? Do you think that he's going to be able to catch 120 games like he seems to want to, or do you think that they're going to be more into what they did last year with splitting time with him and Leon?
I could see Vasquez being kind of more of that main guy and taking on more of a role. When we talked to Cora the other day and asked him about that, he wouldn't commit one way or another. And it was probably because it was like his very first day and he didn't want to, you know, pigeonhole guys into roles just yet. But I could see Vasquez kind of being that main guy, in Leon kind of coming in maybe once or twice a week. So it's sort of a two-thirds, one-third-ish, or even maybe a little bit more for Vasquez. So, yeah, Cora just said he wants to have he's happy to have two solid catchers and Swihart, you know, as backing them up. Vasquez seems ready. I mean, obviously he was great last year, and the bat, you know, was sort of a surprise too. He seems ready. You know, the arm obviously that he has is phenomenal. And just kind of his mindset and kind of how he calls the game has always impressed the team. So I wouldn't be surprised if sort of in the next few weeks, if he emerges more as, you know, a true number one. But, you know, I think that they appreciate the luxury they have in having two pretty solid catchers. And again, a third one that's, you know, right there.
Yeah, it's definitely an enviable catcher position right now for the team. In terms of best shape of their life candidates, have you seen anybody? It seems like Holt might be in that discussion at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It was kind of like surprising to see this like bulked up Brock Holt. It was kind of almost like what Benintendi came to camp last year. Devers seems kind of have lost a little bit of the baby fat that he maybe had last year. He seems a little bit trimmer. We haven't Hanley's not here yet and Pedroia's not here yet, so not all the guys or the position players don't have to report. Full squad isn't for another couple days, so we haven't seen everybody yet, but yeah, it was just sort of surprising to see Holt kind of having put on a little bit of weight and seemingly stronger and, you know, for him, hopefully, you know, a healthier year.
So you think we can pencil him in for 30 dingers?
Yeah, we'll see. I know he was joking around with some guys about, you know, hitting how many home runs he'll hit today when they were taking live BP. So we'll see what he can put out.
Yeah, we've been killing him a little bit on the pod this off season because of the inconsistencies. So I wonder if he's been listening and then just angrily lifting weights. So
yeah, it's definitely all because of us.
I hope so. So we have to ask you about non-roster invites because I know those are probably the most exciting players for you to talk about. But who is the most exciting non-roster invite? Who are you pumped to see? Who have you seen so far?
Yeah, again, like I was saying, a lot of those guys are kind of floating around. But one of the guys that kind of sticks out that we've heard a lot about is Bobby Pointer. A reliever that's going to be I can see him. Honestly, if anybody that, you know, of this group, he seems kind of the most promising and likely to kind of help out at some point. He had a good season last year. He is like highly regarded by the team just in terms of, you know, the stuff that he's been able to kind of put together. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head of what he did last year, but I know that it was a pretty, we talked to Ben Crockett, the director of player development, at the rookie camp at the beginning of January, and Pointer came up and he was just saying how impressed he was with just sort of how Bobby Pointer handled last year and kind of taking a step forward. So that seems to be a guy that I kind of want to keep an eye on. And I hadn't before this camp, I hadn't seen too much of Jeremy Barfield. I know he was in Pawtucket last year, but he's massive. He's like 6'5". I was like, who is this guy? And then I was like, oh, this must be Barfield, because I saw him with the outfield trio a few days ago. But he looks like a force. You know, he's about a foot taller than everybody else, and you know, seems like he could be a really solid player. You know, he has a pretty interesting story of being kind of an indie ball, I guess, in the beginning of last year, and then kind of getting noticed and doing really well with Pawtucket last year. So he seems like a pretty interesting guy. Yeah, I haven't seen Ruzne yet. Ruzne Castillo. So again, the saga with him kind of continues seeing what they can do with him. But I'm not sure. You know, I know he was in winter ball. And did well there, but yeah, some of those guys can kind of jump out and surprise you. I mean, Chavis has been around a little bit and is super eager to kind of contribute. He might be, you know, he's one of the more high profile guys there, and it's obviously his first big league camp, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what he can do and kind of how he meshes in and how he kind of stands out. But yeah, some of those guys, those are some of the guys that I guess I'll be keeping an eye on.
Any chance you think Barfield actually gets to play meaningful time with the team this year?
That's a good question. Yeah. Cause I mean, like, I honestly hadn't thought about it until, you know, I got to camp and I was like, this guy looks like a really solid player. And I knew, like, I had read a lot about him last year. I didn't have time to see him play last year. But I knew of him and I knew he had been a good player. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a chance. You know, like, you know, we always go back to injuries crop up, you know, guys kind of find their way here and there. If he's doing well, I don't see why not, that they couldn't, you know, figure out a way to make room. Maybe the Bryce Brent stuff doesn't end up working out and there's, you know, a hole that they can kind of fill there. So, I mean, we'll see how things play out. But, it seems like he's got an interesting story, and obviously he's probably got a chip on his shoulder to kind of prove that he, you know, where he came from and all that. So we'll kind of see how that plays out.
Do you think Brock Holt could take him in an arm wrestling match right now?
I don't know. I mean, he's like probably like a foot and a half taller than Brock Holt, but he like seriously looks like a football player. So it's kind of funny to see him like walking around the clubhouse because most of these guys are, you know, 5'9", 5'10", 6 feet.
Yeah, he must tower over Mookie.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. He was running with Mookie and Benintendi, and it was just the funniest, yeah, juxtaposition. So look, he looks more like a pitcher than an outfielder. But yeah,
is Benny as jacked as everybody's saying?
So he looks like he's just put on a little bit more weight, not necessarily muscle. But again, I know last year he's talked about kind of he's had trouble keeping on weight throughout like a baseball season. So I know last year he came into camp like jacked, like we're saying that Brock is. This year he seems a little bit just more like heavier weight wise, but I'm wondering if it's because he lost a lot of weight last year throughout the season. He always has a hard time kind of keeping the weight on. Yeah, I mean, he still looks in good shape. And, you know, I don't know that he's been, you know, lifting the chains or whatever he did last year. But yeah, so, I mean, he seems to be kind of in right where he was, I guess, pretty much last year at this point.
All right.
The Red Sox just signed Nunez.
Oh, wow.
According to Robert Murray. So.
Breaking news.
Good time to do a podcast.
I'll be getting a text from my editor shortly. So.
There you go. So, Jen, before we let you go today, we really need to ask about Chris Sale's throwing program. He gave an interview about it. It was a little bit cryptic. Again, it was very Patriots-like. There was some debate as to, you know, how much it sounds like he's actually buying into this. One thing it seems like we have seen from Chris Sale is that this guy is 1,000% all the time. And getting him to kind of peel back a little bit on that seems like it might be an impossible task. So what's your sense on the new throwing program and sort of getting him to try and be stronger later in the season?
Yeah, I think that's exactly going to be the challenge. I think what the benefit for him, or kind of the plan for him. No, I think they all know that that's how he is, and kind of they set the plan up in the sense that they're not going to be limiting his, you know, pitch count or innings in season. It's more about the ramp up this spring and kind of how they handle just spring training. Last year, he talked a lot about, and we kind of knew this, and we even saw this in his first spring training start last year. He hit 97 in the first inning. Wow. And it was like, what is going on? we were in, I think they were playing the Nationals in West Palm Beach, and we had all traveled out there, and then he hit like 97 consistently on the radar, and we were like, this is nuts. So knowing that, he talked a lot about kind of how he came in way too like amped up and was like in mid-season form by the beginning of spring training, because he wanted to prove, you know, he had just gotten traded, first time with a new team, obviously, you know, from the area with the FGCU and kind of all these emotions that went into it. He was didn't maybe handle his adrenaline too much last year, and kind of just wore himself out by mid-season, and then was trying to, you know, get through the end of the year. So the plan, and again, didn't really give many details. Like you said, it was a little cryptic, but in my mind, they're just kind of going to pull him back more in spring training when it obviously doesn't matter as much. And so that he's kind of, you know, they're kind of in that slingshot mode, and they can kind of let go on that slingshot on opening day. And then he can kind of, you know, go from there, whereas he's not going to be throwing 97 in his first start this year. And maybe they'll limit the innings or the outings in spring and kind of just the in-between days and that kind of thing. That's what it sounds like to me. And again, you know, in season, he talked about not wasting pitches a lot of last year. You know, a lot of the strikeouts that he got, you know, he was infamous for having those huge, you know, swing and miss numbers. But a lot of that came because he would try to trick guys into, you know, swinging at pitches that they weren't expecting him to throw. And he was kind of trying to strike everybody out. I don't know if we'll see the same strikeout numbers, because he's going to be trying to eliminate some of those waste pitches that he called it. So that might be a little bit of a change. Maybe he'll be pitching a little bit more to contact. I don't think it'll be anything too drastic. But I can see that kind of being a minor thing that he adjusts, in season to kind of eliminate maybe even five or six pitches, you know, a game that could add up. So I think that's kind of what the rough plan is from hearing him talk the other day, and just, you know, kind of holding himself back, and he's a lot more comfortable this year and doesn't, you know, feel the need to prove himself, and, you know, just doesn't want to be worn out by the end of the year. And I think he has that in the back of his mind now. So I think while he is that crazy competitor, I think he doesn't want to get to where he was last year, and that'll kind of keep him at bay.
Yeah. Well, we hope it works, and we hope that he is sharp for September and October, because that's when we're going to need him for sure. So thanks so much, Jen, for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming on. If you did enjoy Jen on the podcast today, please check out her work. She writes at Mass Live, and you can find her on Twitter at JC McCaffrey. She is very good at answering Twitter questions, too. So I can definitely vouch for that.
Thanks, Jen. Great.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, so you have just listened to the segment of the podcast with Jen McCaffrey. Thanks again to Jen for joining us. But now you are back with me and Matt Collins to talk about Eduardo Nunez, who signed while we were actually doing the podcast with Jen. The signing is not official. However, it does seem like that is going to happen pending a physical. But Matt, you have written about this already because you were writing while we were podcasting, which is pretty epic.
We didn't have to reveal that, but okay.
But either way, it's not exactly a slam dunk here, is it?
As far as the physical?
Yes.
No, at least not. I mean, definitely not compared to your typical physical after a free agent signing. Obviously, I think most of us remember Nunez literally being carried off the field in the right at the beginning of game one in the ALDS. That knee injury was pretty gruesome, and they miscalculated it once or twice towards the end of the year, so there's a chance that's still affecting him. That being said, Peter Abraham of the Globe said that they had been kind of watching him work out a little bit and scouting him in the Dominican over the winter, so hopefully that goes smoothly and this will be official in a few days.
Yeah, this is awesome news. If he is healthy and he does sign the deal, it seems like it is going to be a one-year contract, which is kind of that show-me contract that we were hoping for all offseason. It seemed to make a lot of sense for both sides. I am a little surprised that, you know, when the details do come out, if it is only 1 year, that no other team was willing to take this chance on him. He might just have chosen the Red Sox because he liked it so much here.
It might be. There's an option for a second year, although we don't know what kind of option that is, so that is worth noting. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if he preferred to stay in Boston, and I don't think he turned down a huge deal to stay here or anything, but mm-hmm. he played really well last year. The park seemed really well suited for him. The AL East is full of good hitters' parks, so if he was going to go do a prove-it type contract, it would be best to go to a place you're familiar and a place where you've already succeeded like this.
Well, all of a sudden, the lineup looks like it has fewer holes, and you know we don't know whether or not JD is still going to sign. It could be a potential that that's going to happen too. But right now, I mean, Eduardo Nunez being there rather than any of the guys we talked about earlier in the show, whether that's Brock Holt, Devin Marrero, any of those guys, even Swihart, I think this is pretty ideal.
Yeah, all of a sudden this lineup looks a lot deeper. I just opened up Roster Resource, which is where I usually go to look at the lineup, and they already have Nunez in there, and just having him slotted into that lineup, all of a sudden you have, they have Devers hitting 7th, Vasquez hitting 8th, Bradley hitting 9th. Cool. I'd probably swap that around a little bit, but either way, your worst hitter is probably going to be Christian Vasquez, and if he's anything close to what he was last year, that's a really deep lineup. And then you think about the possibility of adding JD Martinez to that, and it's exciting. Nunez is not a perfect player. His defense leaves a lot to be desired. There are issues here, but offensively, it's a lot better.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's interesting that Roster Resource slotted him in at the second spot there. Do you think that he's going to hit towards the top, or you think he's going to be more towards the bottom of the lineup?
I would guess. He's definitely not hitting second.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Alex Cora has made a point of saying that every lineup he's thrown together has Betts first, Benintendi second, so I don't think they're going to deviate from that. It wouldn't totally shock me if he hit third, depending on what they think of Bogarts and what they think of Ramirez, and obviously if Martinez signs. But if I was making the lineup, I'd probably have him in the bottom half, around 6th, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see him hitting there. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He's just a nice little player, though. You mentioned the fit with Fenway. He's awesome. He's got a little bit more pop than I thought he was going to have. He's good on the bases. It's going to be awesome to have him back. He was one of the most fun players to watch last year by far.
Yeah, he's my favorite kind of player. I don't think he's not as good as he was with the Red Sox last year. He was bananas. But he's just a lot of fun. He's really fast. He's really aggressive on the bases. He doesn't strike out. He doesn't walk. He's going to put the ball in play all the time. I don't know how much you buy into this kind of thing, but he was a legitimate spark plug last year. The team was not playing well when they traded for him, and Nunez and Devers kind of came at the same time, and that totally changed the season. And it's not like Nunez is going to single-handedly carry a team at any point, but just his presence kind of seemed to change things in the lineup. So he was just really easy to root for sure.
Yeah, he seems like a high character, good clubhouse guy. And every report when he was coming over from the Giants in that trade kept mentioning his presence in the clubhouse as well. So I think that's definitely a big reason why they bring him back. They want to create a positive environment here. And, you know, it has been leaking out a little bit more recently that the clubhouse wasn't optimal at all times last year. So if he can contribute to a good environment there, especially with Cora in to kind of change that atmosphere, this could be a really positive thing for the club.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm interested to see what happens next. Not even as far as Martinez. We can get into that in a minute. But just as far as what this means for the roster, because honestly, I mean, this just happened. I haven't looked at it too much. But somebody's getting squeezed out.
Someone decent, too.
Well, so they have to make room on the 40-man. And my guess would be, if there's not a trade coming, I would assume it's going to be Devin Marrero or Williams Jerez will be designated for assignment. I don't know if they want to clear a pitcher off right now, but I think Jerez is pretty clearly the weakest link on the roster at this point.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, especially with the emergence of Bobby Pointer and Robbie Scott. They tend to like him a lot. I don't think Jerez is going to realistically be an option for this team at any point this year.
Yeah, and I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if he would be able to be snuck through waivers. And I don't know if he can. He might be able to become a free agent. Because I know that's why they put him on the 40-man in the first place. But at this point in the game, he might not even do that. He might just stick with the Red Sox anyway. So
yeah,
we'll see. Either way, I mean, there's going to be somebody taken off the bench too.
Yeah, Jerez is old. He's almost 26.
Yeah, he's he was drafted as an outfielder. So he's kind of behind the game. He's gone through the system fairly quickly as a pitcher. But he didn't start pitching until, I don't know, he was like 22 or something. So he's kind of like Jeremy Barfield in that sense, just the reverse.
To me, that what this indicates, though, is that there was probably something they didn't like about Marco Hernandez's recovery. And that's complete conjecture from me. But I would guess that they looked at Marco Hernandez and just thought, maybe we don't want to roll the dice going into the season with this. And if they could sign Eduardo Nunez at a reduced rate, why not do that? Because the shoulder surgery that Marco Hernandez had was not a small procedure.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I was personally kind of overestimating how easy it was going to be for him to come back and slide right in an opening day. So I would definitely agree that he played a big role. I think the market in general did too. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing at the start of the offseason, they didn't think they were going to get Nunez on a one-year deal that's presumably going to be pretty cheap. I mean, even just looking at Todd Frazier got, what, 2 for $17? Mm-hmm. And I think Frazier's a more established regular than Nunez. So, I mean, a one-year deal worth single digits seems low, at least based on my expectations a few months ago.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it is kind of surprising that a team like the Yankees didn't come in here and try and surpass that offer. If they had interest, and it was rumored that they did, because last week when we were on the podcast together and you mentioned what a good fit he would be with the Yankees, I just looked at that lineup and I was like, damn, Matt is absolutely right. Like, this guy's a perfect fit for the Yankees, and I would be devastated if he went there because I like the guy so much, but it seemed like, why not? For them, they have so few holes at this point. Why not do that?
I don't know what the Yankees' payroll is right now. I know that they're staying under the luxury tax by all means this year. Not that Nunez is going to be so expensive that they wouldn't be able to work around it, but that might play a role. I think also the Red Sox have more familiarity with the knee injury than anyone else because mm-hmm. it happened while he was on their payroll and their doctors already kind of know the deal. So that might play a factor into it too.
It's just going to be nice not to see him in pinstripes or wearing a Rays shirt.
Oh, God, if he went to the Rays. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he did seem like that Rays type of guy, though, that they might really like him because of the skill set. But, hey, happy to have him back with the Red Sox. But my question to you, Matt, is do you read anything into this? Do you think that this was simply a standalone signing, or do you think this was the type of move that was made because they know something else is coming?
The former, I think. I don't think this stops them from doing anything else. I think that they are going to keep trying to play chicken with JD Martinez and maybe adjust their deal if they have to, but I don't think this really moves the needle that much at all. I will say I've seen people say that this hurts them from getting Martinez because of the payroll, and again, we don't know right now what the money is, but I will say that assuming the Red Sox just cut bait with the minimum salary guy before Nunez is factored in, they have $210 million on the books, which leaves them $27 million for Nunez plus Martinez to stay under that 237 mark. Not that I think they have to stay under that mark, but just if they want to. And it's cutting it a little bit tight, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, especially considering they can make deals at some point during the year if they want to.
Yeah.
And also, they can backload that contract with JD Martinez. If they want to make the money shorter up front, I'm sure that they'd be able to make it sweet enough on the back end.
No. The luxury tax is based on average annual value. So yeah, so that wouldn't work. They do that because of that. So teams can't mess around like that.
Well, there goes my plan.
Yeah, but I mean, still, if they go over, I mean, I've said this a few times on this podcast, I won't go into it too much again, but I really don't think going over the 237 mark and moving back 10 spots in the draft in 2019 is that big a deal, because JD Martinez is the kind of guy that can put them over the top, and they're in a market right now where they're the only team willing to go over the luxury tax. They're in a huge, massively tight division race. The marginal value of a win right now for them is so much bigger than most other teams in baseball. I mean, just get it done.
Yeah, I'm with you. Pump this thing up to 260 if you have to. Make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't make a habit out of going over this 237 mark, but I don't think they're going to have to go so high on Martinez that they won't be able to get back under that mark next year, because if Martinez is here, Hanley Ramirez's option is not going to vest, and that money comes off the books next year.
Right.
Drew Pomerantz is coming off the books probably. Craig Kimbrel might be coming off the books. I mean, they can go over it for a year and be fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's a no-brainer for this year, especially considering the guys they have locked up for 2018. So I think the team should be all in, and I would expect them to be this year. So anything else on these signings before we get to a couple listener questions?
No, not really. I think we covered everything for now.
All right. So we got a couple questions tonight. One is from Justin Gonzalez, who asks us, who will be a more impact player this year, Carson Smith or Rafael Devers? We just heard a pretty positive health report for Carson Smith, but yes. I know Devers is your guy.
Yeah, this is a wild question. I love Carson Smith, but I mean, come on.
Yeah, no.
It's Devers.
Devers could hit 35 bombs this year if everything goes perfect for him, so... he's definitely going to be the more important guy. But I think Carson Smith could be a huge X factor. I don't want to discount his presence.
Yeah, I think Smith is – I mean, even beyond this year, I think he's – this year is pretty huge for their future. If he shows that he's the guy he was with Seattle, they're going to be a lot more comfortable moving on from Kimbrel. Not that I think that they necessarily should, but if his market gets out of control next winter and – they see that Carson Smith is an elite arm again, then they don't really have to overpay for a closer, which is a nice little bonus.
Yeah, it would be nice to not spend $1 million on relievers for once.
Well, I love Craig Kimbrell. I'd like him around forever. But
you do. You absolutely do. My favorite question maybe that we have gotten since we've been taking questions is this next one from Trevor Shackles. And he says, is Andrew Cashner the most Baltimore Orioles signing ever? I'd love to hear a rotation consisting of the most Orioles pitchers you can think of. So you actually tweeted that out, that Andrew Cashner was...
Like 10 minutes before he asked that question, Cashner is easily the most Orioles pitcher of all time.
I totally agree with you. So I want to play a game right now where we list guys. We're going to go back and forth. So you'll name one, I'll name one, and we'll get to like... We'll do a six-man rotation because I think that's kind of fun. To see guys that haven't played for the Orioles before...
Okay.
Yeah, you can't be throwing out Wade Miley.
They have a lot of their guys. A lot of their pitchers are extremely Orioles pitchers.
Oh, totally.
I've looked through this, some possible names, and a lot of them have already pitched for the Orioles. But okay, I have some names.
All right. Who do you got first?
Mike Pelfrey. He hasn't pitched for them, right?
No, I don't think so. He's a Twins guy for a long period of time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he doesn't strike anybody out, really. Yeah, I like that pick. Why? Thanks. What was the most Pelfrey thing, or most Orioles thing about Pelfrey to you?
So I did. I put together a little list very quickly. I pretty much just looked for guys who have zero command. And Pelfrey walks a lot of guys and gives up a lot of home runs. So the no strikeouts is a nice little bonus, but Orioles pitchers can strike guys out. You got Ubaldo Jimenez can get strikeouts here and there.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he might be the most Orioles pitcher. He's the guy I think of.
Ubaldo?
Yeah. Just because he's so all over the place.
I always think of Wade Miley. I don't know why. Like, just Wade Miley's face is always what I picture in an Orioles uniform.
He's a Brewer now.
Yeah, it's so weird. All right, my pick is going to be... I'm actually going to go with a former Twin, too. No, former Brave and Twin for a day. Jamie Garcia. Jaime Garcia. Yes, I butcher names all the time. Jaime Garcia. You know, just kind of injured a bunch. Gets in there, throws decent stuff every once in a while, but just not a very good pitcher.
I kind of like Jaime Garcia. I don't know why. That's amazing. He signed with the Blue Jays today.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm seeing that right now. Wow.
Yeah.
This is a busy
day.
Was
a day. Yeah. For cheap deals.
All right. Who you got next?
Tom Kohler.
Ooh, nice. Tom Kohler has terrible stuff.
He's a weird guy, and he's going to hang around. He's the type of guy that's definitely going to hang around until he's like 45 years old. I don't know why, but he's just never going anywhere.
All right. My next pick is Kyle Gibson.
Okay. Kind of like Gibson, too.
Why am I naming guys that you like? I don't like this.
I don't really know why I like Kyle Gibson, but I do.
He did have a sort of a change to his repertoire at the end of the year, and some people are getting excited about that. But by and large, Gibson has been a disappointing innings eater.
You know what it is? He was pretty good in 2015. And that was like, for some reason, that was the year that I really followed the league as a whole. And so now, if you were good in 2015, I'm going to think you're good forever. Pretty much. That's where we're at.
Let's do two more before we close out the show. Who's your next pick?
All right. I'm going to go with modern-day James Shields. Not good James Shields, but the James Shields of like the last couple years.
Okay. I like that. I like that. A guy who's going to get in there, throw a lot of innings, not be very impressive.
Yeah, give you a net negative with all those innings.
Okay, I like that. My last and final choice is going to be a Rockies starter, Kyle Freeland. I hope you don't like him.
I have zero opinion. I thought you were going to say Jorge De La Rosa, but I have zero opinion on Kyle Freeland.
I almost went Chad Bettis, but I do like Chad Bettis at sometimes, so I had to go with Kyle Freeland.
Plus, Chad Bettis is a recent cancer survivor, so we'll give him a break.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But well done, Trevor. That was a great question. I thoroughly enjoy projecting the next wave of Orioles pitchers, and I would bet that we actually got like at least three of the next pitchers that ended up on that team.
Yeah, any time I can slam the Orioles for a little bit, it's a good day.
Absolutely. So after months of nothing, Matt, we finally have a bunch of stuff to talk about. If you enjoyed today's show with Jen on as a fabulous guest and with actual news breaking while we were recording the podcast, subscribe to us. Get on Stitcher, get on iTunes, rate and review us. We are going to be bringing you other guests throughout the year, especially as things get going. And, you know, news has to continue to break because these guys need homes. So we will be with you as that happens. And thank you again for listening to us. And Matt, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.